Welcome to Season 3 of What Does It Profit? I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. For those of you in the tribe, you're going to notice a change. And for those of you listening for the first time, welcome. The inspiration for this episode comes from an experience I had meeting Roberta McDonald. You might remember her from last season's episode about co-ops. Roberta saved 1,500 family farms and was the marketing genius who put Vermont cheese on the map. All right, Roberta calls, invites me to dinner, and that's when I met Gina Schaefer, the owner of what her business card says is a few cool hardware stores. Over dinner, Gina tells her story. It's a story about a woman with entrepreneurialism in her DNA. But more importantly, her story is many stories about the power of the human spirit and how to make a positive change right where you are. For many with a history of substance use disorder, getting a job can be tough. There are a lot of reasons for this. Substance use disorder can cause people to go long periods without working. Most employers see these gaps in people's resumes as being a bad thing. But Gina Schaefer sees it as a chance to help people in recovery rebuild their lives. Gina is the founder and CEO of more than a dozen Ace hardware stores in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and the surrounding areas. In 2003, she'd been laid off from her job in the tech industry, again, and was looking for a fresh start.
I had moved to Logan Circle, which had been destroyed by the riots when Martin Luther King was assassinated, and I was living amongst houses that still had boards on the windows. 14th Street is the main corridor through Logan Circle. There were four businesses. And to give you a frame of reference, the commercial corridor is probably 8 blocks long. And on that entire 8 blocks, there were about four businesses that were in existence. I mean, the riots happened at the time of the assassination and the neighborhood just fell apart. Thousands of arrests, people left the neighborhood, all of the businesses closed up, boards went up on windows. Drug dealers moved in, prostitution was rampant. It was really bad. A lot of the big old row houses became boarding houses. And in the late 80s, early 90s, people started moving back because it was just a cheap place to live.
Gina was determined to bring her neighborhood back to life. So she switched from software to hardware. She and her husband, Mark Friedman, opened their second store in 2005 and a third in 2006, adding a new store nearly every year for a decade. Since then, there have been tremendous upheavals in DC and around the world. Wealth inequality, the COVID-19 pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement.
A lot of the protests went right down the street where our main store is. And so we were really a part of them by default, because they happened right down 14th Street. And so we hung signs out the windows, we would pause and the employees would walk out and join the march. We wanted to make sure that if our team, particularly our team members who are Black or Brown, could feel like they were not just stuck at work when there was a protest happening. And so we would walk outside and join the protest and took customers with us if they wanted to.
Gina says she ultimately decided to sell the business to her more than 250 employees through an employee stock ownership plan.
We wanted to figure out how we could be part of the solution. And an ESOP, an employee stock ownership program, is a really slow wealth growing opportunity, but it was what we thought we could do to make an impact in retail. So as a result of watching those protests and dealing with all of the unrest over the last couple of years, talking about what we could try and do to be part of the solution, that was what we ultimately decided.
Independent businesses, like Gina's, have the power to change communities for the better. Sort of by accident, Gina's stores hired people in recovery. She recognizes that for many of her colleagues, the hardware store is the first chance they've been given to succeed. Gina doesn't ask about drug or criminal histories. one of her first employees was Skippy, a nickname given to him by the store. For him, substance use disorder went hand in hand with a criminal record. But that didn't mean he was less qualified for the job. Or at least that's what Gina thinks when she hires employees who are in recovery. Gina knew about Skippy's past, but also trusted that he was a good person. She's been hiring people in recovery for years and says they make great employees. When Skippy showed up to the store, he wore an electronic ankle bracelet. He'd been waiting a year for a court date.
He walked in and he asked me for a job, and I said, I'm happy to talk to you about a job if you tell me about your jewelry.
Skippy was on house arrest while awaiting an 11-year prison sentence, and no one wanted to give him a job.
But he still has to pay his bills. The phone company doesn't say, oh, we're sorry, you don't have to pay your phone bill while you wait to see if you're going to prison for 11 years. And so I didn't think twice about it.
Skippy ended up managing one of Gina's busiest hardware store locations and working with the company for a decade.
He had a lot of attributes that I think attributed to him being a great manager. He was very good at sales. He was good with money. He could count it, save it, buy new inventory with it, because he knew as a salesperson that if he didn't have product, he couldn't sell it and he couldn't make any more money. He was good at working odd hours. People going to find someone who's selling drugs aren't looking for them between the hours of 9 and 5. So he didn't care what time he had to work, if we needed him to work weekend shifts or evening shifts. At the time, the only restriction we had was his house arrest required that he be back at home within certain hours. And he was really good at dealing with difficult people.
These kinds of stories aren't unusual for Gina. Since opening her first hardware store in Logan Circle, near the Whitman Walker Health Medical Center's Addiction Services Program, she's provided opportunities for many people to thrive, no matter what's in their past. She shares some of these stories in her new book, Recovery Hardware, a nuts and bolts story about building a business, restoring a community, and renovating lives. There's a story about Mike.
Mike is one of my teammates here that was homeless for years, and he started running. And I was walking through the break room one day, and I sort of joke that I don't walk up to new employees and say, hey, tell me something awful about your past, or something great, right? But Mike was telling a younger associate about a race that he had run. You know, he was in his 60s, and he just didn't look like a runner. And I was like, Mike, really? Did you, you know, have you been running your whole life? He's like, no, I just started running 4 years ago. And so we ended up talking about how and why, and he was homeless. And there's an organization called Back on My Feet that meets homeless people where they are by saying, if you come to a meeting, we'll give you a pair of shoes or a pair of pants. And he said, I needed a pair of shoes. And so he went to the meeting, and then he went to another meeting and another meeting. And he's telling me this in the break room. I'm like, I had no idea that this was, you know, how he ended up here. You know, he has a place to live. He has healthcare. He has shoes. And now he helps other people in the same situation.
And Shane Mason, who Gina gave a metaphorical pair of shoes, and he's been running ever since. She met Shane 19 years ago.
Shane came and asked for a job. He was in recovery. He had been clean from drug use for about 6 weeks, which is not very long. And he'll tell you this, but he likes to say he couldn't keep a thought in his head, and he ran around like crazy. Like, there's a lot of nervous energy. And so he was kind of perfect for a two-story hardware store without an elevator. We kept telling him, no, we don't need you. I didn't think I really needed any employees, honestly. I wasn't telling him no because of his status in recovery. And then eventually I did need somebody. And so he came and worked with us. And he stayed for about 11 months. And he left one day really upset. He got very mad at us about something. He stormed out the store. He yelled, I'm never coming back. You're terrible people. I never want to see you again. And, you know, I am sure that in that moment I was embarrassed and devastated, but I never called him to ask why. I never reached out to see, like, if we had done something wrong. I think I was so new in business ownership that I was just as scatterbrained as someone in recovery, to be completely honest. Like, I couldn't think about anything outside of what that immediate next task was in the store. And so I never called him. And he went on his life, and people started coming in from the clinic where he had gone to rehab, saying, Shane sent me. I'm like, he never wants to talk to me again. He told me I was terrible. What do you mean Shane sent you? And that's how we ended up, including Skippy. I mean, that's how we ended up with all these amazing folks on our team. It was all Shane's fault. And then a couple years later, he came back. He had started the 12-step program in recovery, and one of the steps is making amends, and he came back to apologize. And of course, I didn't think he needed to apologize for anything. At that point, I realized, you know, I was the leader. I should have called him to ask what was wrong and what happened. But it was sort of a beautiful reunion in the fact that that was probably, I don't know, 2007 or 8, and we've been friends ever since.
Today, Shane owns Crazy and Helen's, a restaurant in the hip Navy Yard neighborhood of D.C.
Gina, how are you?
Good morning, Don. What's going on?
I came here to see you.
I met up with Shane and Gina at the restaurant. This place was like walking into a little slice of New Orleans right here in the nation's capital. Shane opened the restaurant in 2021. You would never imagine it now, but it had been an Irish sports bar for nearly 20 years. It was dark, there were TVs everywhere, the complete opposite of what he wanted.
Yeah, so we go up the back steps or front steps?
Yeah, let's head out back.
Okay.
That way we're headed straight on up.
All right.
God said when he was making me, he was like, you're going to be short, gay, you'll have some charm, but I'm not giving you any of the other skills gay people have. You're not going to know how to do flowers or pick out colors. God did say, though, that I'm going to make you the kind of person that will know people who know how to do the things you don't know how to do.
So, during the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, Shane asked his friend, Pixie, from Miss Pixie's on 14th Street, of course, down the block from Gina's hardware store, for some help.
I love this woman. She's one of my besties. I begged her. Well, I wouldn't say beg. I said, please, will you help me bring the joy to the restaurant? And so she paused for a second and said, I've never done a restaurant. Yes, I'll do it. And so everything that you see in here, color-wise, sparkly-wise, happy, joyful, was Pixie. The wallpaper, the pinks, the greens, the joyfulness, which is what I wanted the place to feel like when you walk in, like you were welcome. You were coming into my home or Aunt Helen's home, and that we were giving you sugar all over your face.
Shane really did have a crazy Aunt Helen, and so did I. Shane's Aunt Helen was back in Charleston, South Carolina, where he's from. He moved to D.C. in 1984 after high school.
I love where I'm from. I do love being from Charleston. But as a young gay person, my family, my mother was pretty accepting, but my father was a Pentecostal preacher. My father had a lot of charisma and conviction. And when he believed something, he was able to convey that belief and inspire other people to his side. You know what I mean? That kind of person. And I knew at like 14 that I was gay, and I tried to figure it out, you know, like, God, please take it away. All the things that we gay people do when we were growing up back then. I had this sort of revelation at 17 where I thought, wait a minute, I have been taught all my life that God loves me, that God made me, and God made me perfect. And how is it that if those things were true, that God would make me suffer and be an outcast and an abomination? And I went, no, that would not be possible.
Shane had dreams of being an actor.
I had this idea that I was the next Dustin Hoffman, but that I looked more like Brad Pitt, although Brad Pitt was not around yet because Thelma and Louise hadn't come out.
He attended Virginia Commonwealth University's School of the Arts for one semester before going back to waiting tables in D.C. In 1989, he moved to New York City to try his hand at acting. But that didn't pan out.
I basically just worked in restaurants and did whatever I had to do to stay in New York. As the story progresses, having an understanding that drinking and drugs played a big part of all of the not happenings. Like at school, I fell into a party scene, right? I wasn't focused on school. I was focused on my party life. You don't get far when you don't show up for class. But of course, you know, I figured I'd be a star anyway. And so went to New York and fell into like the club kid scene. So I was getting paid to go to clubs and dance, and then I'd work in restaurants.
Then the AIDS epidemic started.
I started losing a lot of friends, and I was like 23. And when basically all your friends die, with the exception of a few, it was, you know, no one, unless you're like 80, do you understand how to process that kind of stuff. So for me, drinking and stuff just kind of, that was a way to understand, medicate. And I will say, drinking and drugs helped. I will say they saved my life until they stop working, right? They work until they stop working. But I don't want to go dark. Because, like, as I tell that story, you know, I'm just thinking of, like, all of the possibilities, right, of youth. You know, when you're young and life is full of possibilities and there's just so much that could happen. And most of the time, those things can happen if the focus is there, the dedication is there, the commitment is there, and the alcohol and drugs, that became the focus and the discipline and the commitment. I certainly had a commitment to it. And so all the other things kind of have to slip away. But I didn't notice those things slipping at the time.
It was 2003, and Shane was living on the streets of New York City.
I was evicted from my home, and all of a sudden I'm homeless and living in the streets of New York with a Pomeranian in Chelsea. All I did was get high and survive and make sure my little doggy was happy. He was always happy, that little guy.
Until a friend of his bought him a bus ticket to come back to D.C. that summer. He started going to the Triangle Club, an LGBTQ recovery house in my neighborhood in DuPont Circle.
I was unemployable. My brain didn't work. I mean, my brain was just a jumbled up mess. I was impulsive, too emotional. All the things that happen when our brains have been jumbled with drugs. And so people literally took care of me. And after about 3 months, they were able to clean me up enough that it was time to look for a job. And some friends of mine rented the apartment in the basement of Gina and Mark. And they said, we should try to get you a job at Logan Hardware. And I said, oh, yeah. I mean, as a tweaker, when I was doing drugs, oh, my gosh, I would go to a hardware store and sit in the nuts and bolts section on the ground, just looking at nuts and bolts and trying to figure out what to do with them, what I could do with them, all the things that you can do with hardware. And I thought, that sounds like a great job. And I weighed like 96 pounds. And so I went on. I think maybe it was the next week I showed up again. And then I think I came myself this time and I was like, hi, so, you know, I'm still looking for a job if you are hiring. She's like, no, not yet. We still don't nearly need anybody, which is accurate because I did eventually get a job there. And they didn't really need me.
Shane just started showing up at Gina's hardware store. And then she asked him to help unload a truck of supplies.
I think they might have been surprised I actually showed up. We started doing it. And I thought, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be pleasant. I'm going to be fast. I'm going to carry the three things that I can carry. And I'm going to run to the mezzanine level. And I'm going to put it where it belongs. And I'm going to run back. And so I did that. And we got the truck emptied. And then 1 week, I just came in. I just sort of came to work. And I wasn't on a schedule. I wasn't actually hired. And I'm like, I think Gina said something like, hey, they started calling me Lyft. As sort of, you know, that was my nickname because I would lift three things and run through the store. They're like, hey, Lyft, what are you doing here? And I was like, I'm going to put away some plumbing.
He was hired that week. The job, and getting treatment for substance use disorder at the Whitman Walker Health Clinic, became Shane's life. And then his friend needed a job, so he recommended they work at the hardware store. Even after Shane left the store, he continued to tell people in recovery to talk to Gina.
in the recovery community, when people hear a place like, you know, Crazy Aunt Helen's, I'm doing the same thing. If someone was looking at my name on paper at that moment, chances were not great for me. And only because of the help of others was I able to get to even just having some stability, some life, much less a dream as big as this, you know, to have a 5,000 square foot restaurant that I get to fill with my joyfulness, my energy, and hire people who can see that vision and want to further that vision.
Gina knows there are risks involved with hiring people in recovery. But she says many of those are risks employers come up against with anyone they hire.
When I hear stories like Shane, I think one of the first things I think of is that, you know, people often say, oh, you're giving folks a second chance. And I believe that a lot of people never had a first chance, or their first chance might have been stalled somehow. And so I don't think Mark and I have given people second chances. I think we've created a platform, I hope, where people can, you know, step on that platform to get them to the next step. People don't need to stay at the hardware store. They need to go on and become their fullest self. And sometimes that is staying at the hardware store. And I think that's beautiful also. But when I hear stories like Shane's, it feels good because I feel like we've figured out a way to create a community that then wants to pay it forward. And I hear that a lot. And this was an accident. It was the most beautiful, happy accident that ever could have existed. I never expected to own a hardware business, and I never expected to hire some 96-pound weakling in recovery, much less, you know, 85 people or more that, you know, could tell a similar story. And so I think what I hear is that we can't forget that there's a resiliency in the human spirit and that you can make an impact on one person's life and maybe not even know it. And it doesn't take a lot to make that impact.
As a business ethicist, I see the entrepreneur as a kind of natural change maker. They see a need and they fill it, whether it's a hardware store or something else. But Gina takes change maker to a whole new level. In her book, Recovery Hardware, Gina tells many more stories about the people she's worked with and the community that continues to inspire her. And spoiler alert, my favorite story is when she decides to sell her stores to her employees. It's a great read and a fantastic gift to inspire the entrepreneurs in your life. Pick up a copy at recoveryhardware.com. Next up on What Does It Profit? We're going to Starbucks, where union organizers across the country are providing workers a jolt of not only caffeine, but also another kind of energy.
Every time one of those no votes was read, it was like my stomach dropping because it was scary. We had done nothing for 4 months but, you know, live and breathe this campaign with the hope of making our work lives better, you know? And so the idea of failing at that was terrifying.
In the meantime, we would love to hear from you. You can find us on LinkedIn at What Does It Profit Podcast or on Twitter at WDIP Podcast. You can also leave a voice memo at producer at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com, and we may play your comments in a future episode. What Does It Profit is a production of the Solidarity Economy Workshop at Georgetown University. The show is hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Jordan Gaspore is our senior producer. Special thanks to our Season 3 researchers and assistant producers, Sophia Chen, Hannah Woodford, and Andy Fang. Music for What Does It Profit was composed by Nick Pennington. Support for What Does It Profit is provided by the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, the McDonough School of Business, and the Capital Applied Learning Lab at Georgetown University. You can learn more at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. And just before we let you go, remember, never stop asking yourself, in the work that you do and the investments that you make, what does it profit?